I'm Dan Nicasso with the Honolulu Advertiser. We're talking to Rick Ching, Executive Vice President of Servco Pacific Inc., who is responsible for Servco Automotive Operations. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning.
Very impressive facility you have here.
Thank you.
It's brand new? Can we still say brand new?
Brand new. It opened on May 22nd. And actually, this weekend, we will be having a formal public grand opening ceremony.
Oh, really? What does that entail?
Well, we've invited some very special customers. We'll have some food, of course, and some very brief ceremonies, but really celebrating the opening of the facility, showing it off to some customers who maybe haven't had a chance to see it yet.
And it's the building we're in is 11,000 square feet, is that correct?
Yes, I believe it's 11,000 square feet of retail square footage.
Uh-huh. But we're sitting in a nice leather chairs, and the first impression that really struck me is in the I say showroom in quotes. Mm-hmm. It really looks like a high-end hotel lobby. And the thing that also struck me was that there were only, I believe, two vehicles in this massive showroom. What's the philosophy there?
Yeah, you're correct. On the interior, we only had two vehicles this morning, and we usually will have maybe two or three. We don't put a lot of vehicles on the inside. The feel that we were trying to create by working with our architects and our design team was a very open, welcoming, hospitality-type feel. So when you say that it reminds you of a hotel, it is a compliment because that was what we were trying to design. Thank you. So it's we want it to be very...
That wasn't an accident. You were...
Yeah, it was very much by design. We worked with a number of architectural teams to create the feel. We wanted a feel of Hawaiiana, hospitality, openness, very welcoming to our customers, so that as they come up the stairs and pass our small water feature with the sound of water, that they're very welcomed in and they feel comfortable walking into our facilities. Customer service is very important to Servco. We work on it all the time, and we certainly, the focus around the customer and them feeling comfortable is very important to us, and we wanted a facility that matched our approach to doing business, because our sales professionals also that's how we interact with our customers.
But you can have a nice facility, you can have a nice water feature, but you can also fill the showroom with lots and lots of cars.
You could, but I don't think it would create that feeling that you described as you walked in. If it was cluttered with a lot of vehicles, then it has a different feel. Now, we do park a number of vehicles outside in the Lanai area, and what we found is, especially with our great weather here in Hawaii, we don't have extremes of cold or heat, it's very pleasant for the customers to wander around some cars on the outside, and then when they feel comfortable and they're ready to start talking to a sales consultant, they'll walk inside, one of our greeters will come up and talk to them a little bit, and then when the time's right, we can put them together with one of our sales professionals, and they'll start talking about the specific model or a test drive or whatever they're interested in doing.
And then you have these, I can't even measure them or guesstimate how big they are, these flat screen plasma TVs in your showroom, and in the, I want to call it a lounge, but I guess it's a customer waiting area?
Customer waiting lounge. For our service customers as well as our new car customers, they can sit there and feel at home. As you said, nice chairs. We have a couch out there.
So somebody tapping away on, or a couple people tapping away on laptops. So there.
That's right. In the service customer lounge, we have carrels for them to work quietly if they want to be away from the TV, and they can hook up their laptop. It's also set up for both wired and wireless. So again, we tried to think of all the things that would make a customer feel comfortable as they waited for their car to be serviced, or if they're waiting for a friend to buy a vehicle. And we have a child's play area back there, so hopefully the kids are comfortable too.
I noticed that as well, yeah.
A big part of the buying experience with respect to a car.
Sure. Okay, we have some questions about you and your background, and then we'll move into questions about Servco and what you've been doing recently and what the plans are for the future. Your resume says your name is Douglas. Who's Rick?
Actually, it's Patrick. It's
excuse me, Patrick.
Yeah, my given name
Rick
is Patrick. Rick is my nickname. I've always been called Rick. Nobody's ever called me Patrick.
Okay.
If I get cold calls and somebody asks for Patrick, I know it's a cold call.
Okay. How old are you?
I am 49.
And your title is Executive Vice President?
Yes.
That's a new title for you.
Yes. We recently made some changes in our organization, and I was previously running what we called our retail operations, mm-hmm. which are all of our dealerships. I was Senior Vice President in charge of our retail operations. We recently brought in a new Senior Vice President to run retail operations who was previously running our Waipahu dealership. And so he was promoted, uh-huh. and so now I will oversee both the automotive retail operations as well as our automotive distribution operations.
And then this took effect July 1?
July 1.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Can you tell me about your career at Servco?
Yes, I've been with Servco just over 21 years. Mm-hmm. I actually have a background in finance and accounting. So prior to joining Servco, I was with Deloitte & Touche, one of the large CPA firms.
Sure.
Actually, Servco was one of my clients.
Ah.
So I was hired by my client back many years ago, back in 85. So I...
You were also CFO for Servco.
Right. So I didn't start as CFO when I first joined Servco. I was the treasurer. Uh-huh. Responsible for cash management type things, taxes.
Is that unusual for a financial person to go into the retail operational side of things?
A little bit. We've had some. Servco encourages its management and its executives to try new things. And of late, we actually have a number of people who have done that. And so for me, it was a big switch. After 21 years in a CPA firm or with an accounting finance background, so 16 years in Servco's corporate operations, ending as CFO, uh-huh. I was offered the opportunity to move to operations. And
tell me about that. How old were you, and what were some of those issues in that transition?
Well, I would have been mid-40s, mm-hmm. 44. And it was, one of the things you asked is a breakthrough job, and that probably was my breakthrough job.
Okay.
Later than most people, I guess, would normally put a breakthrough job.
And so what was that first transitional position?
Yeah, I left being Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. I became Senior Vice President and in charge of our automotive distribution operations.
Senior Vice President in charge of...
auto distribution.
And did you say, I'll leap at the opportunity, or was there some... Did you make a list of pros and cons? And
I did. At first, actually, our chairman and chief executive officer, Mark Fukunaga, had asked me a year before, would I ever consider another role in Servco? And I said, of course. I would consider other opportunities and, of course, what the company needs to balance those two things, I would consider it. And a year later, he came to me and said, well, we've got an opportunity for you to go run the auto distribution business. And my initial reaction was, that doesn't sound like such a good idea, although it's a great job. It is a great job. And I went home, it was a Friday, I believe, and I went home on Saturday and I thought about it. And I said, well, if I was serious a year ago when I said I would consider it, what better job could I possibly move to? Because I was really moving laterally, mm-hmm. even though...
On the flow chart.
Yeah, on the flow chart, I was moving laterally.
Let me stop you right there. So as CFO, did you have a large staff to...
Not nearly as large as I had once I moved to auto distribution,
uh-huh. okay.
But I like to say our corporate office does the brain surgery in this company. It's very challenging intellectual work.
Uh-huh.
I had 20 years of training in the finance field.
And those are people that you know and you've
dealt with.
Yeah, you know those kinds of the way their brains work.
Right, the bankers and the accountants, mm-hmm. and our consultants and the attorneys and that sort of thing. That's where all I went to school for and got
right.
my MBA in, and all of a sudden I had this opportunity to go play with cars. And I said...
And what kind of personalities are those people? I know nothing about that, so...
Car people are different, so they like cars. And I later moved to the retail side. The retail side is even more different because now you're really talking about the dealerships.
Highly motivated, salespeople and
highly
customer
motivated.
Service oriented.
Right. And the dealers, some of our friendly competitors, very individualistic, very smart,
mm-hmm.
good business people, very driven. And car guys, they like cars, so toys, playthings. So.
Were you a car guy?
I consider myself a car guy. I'm not a real intense car guy, but I enjoy cars. I like to drive the different models, go out to the test track when we have ride and drive. So I enjoy learning about the vehicles, but I certainly can't wrench a car or do anything
right.
like that. No.
My 16 years old, I had a cherry red Fairlady Z from Japan, right-hand drive, 5-speed. It was a rust bucket. Broke my heart. Broke my heart. I had to get used to that. So, was it? You were starting to say that if I had been serious a year ago, I had to be. How hard was that, though, to make that?
To make
start getting fascinated about this transition.
How hard was it to make the decision?
Yeah,
it was scary. I mean, to 20 years in a field that you're comfortable in,
right.
and to be a CFO for a company like Servco, you think that that's the end. Well, gee, where am I going to go
right.
in the finance field? I was very pleased with it. It was a great job. But it was an opportunity and a challenge I felt I just couldn't pass up.
How did you, were there things that you did, mistakes you might want to share about dealing with this new group of people, either in the first job or the second one? I mean, were there things that mm-hmm. you had to say, okay, I'm going to adjust my leadership skills, management skills?
Well, in the distribution business, we had a great team. They knew their job very well. I felt there wasn't a lot of changes that I had to make coming in. So I had the luxury of sitting back and talking to a lot of them, figuring out what was going on, and not feeling there was some burning bush mm-hmm. or fire that had to be put out. Just a really professional team. And so they made the transition very easy for me. So it wasn't that difficult.
I think said let's chew up the bean counter or trim them up.
They still say that now. Actually, when I moved to the retail side, I felt there were a few more things that we had to address. Servco has been around since 1919, and we've been in the car business almost as long. We started as a car repair garage, but we've been in the new car business almost as long as we've been in existence. So we had some things some legacy issues that we just had to get over.
Mm-hmm.
So when I joined retail, I felt there was more urgency in terms of making some changes in the way we did business.
Mm-hmm.
But by then, I'd had a couple of years already transitioning to the operational job
mm-hmm.
from being CFO, so it made it a little easier. And of course, our distribution business works very closely with our retail
sure.
business, so I knew the people involved. I thought I knew what we had to address, and so it made it a little easier to deal with it, having come first that sort of a transitional operational position
uh-huh.
through distribution, and then going to auto retail.
So the you went into the distribution side in what year?
2001.
And that would be your breakthrough job?
Yes.
And you think you were 44?
Yes.
Okay. And then when did you move to the retail side?
2003.
Not long at all. Okay. And again, that would be your breakthrough job because it kind of forced you... I didn't want to put words in your mouth. Why?
Yeah. The first operational
yes.
job would be the breakthrough job. I think when you're a chief financial officer or any of the support divisions,
mm-hmm.
your job is to support the operations, provide them information, help them make better decisions, and you make decisions within your own sphere of the finance area, loans or an accounting issue. But operationally, you're not making the final call. When you make a transition, in such as I did from CFO to actually an auto distribution, you are responsible for making the decision
mm-hmm.
whether they turn out well or don't turn out
right.
so well. It was your decision. So you're less of an advisor when you're not an advisor when you're on the operational side. And so that's a transition that why I consider that the breakthrough position. Now you're on the line because you're making those decisions.
Right. But was it a breakthrough for you in your career because it gave you a second career because it pushed you outside of your comfort zone?
Well, it definitely pushed me outside my comfort zone.
Yeah.
It's easy to say when you're CFO, I could do that, or I could, our guy should do a better job.
Right.
But actually being on the firing line is different. And it was, it did push me outside my comfort zone. It challenged me to do things, think about things differently.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Any regrets?
No regrets at all. The only regret might be if I had the opportunity to do it earlier.
Oh.
Yeah. Not that I didn't enjoy
the
finance side. It's a solid structural background, great training ground. But
had you known you were to enjoy it this much, you would have?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you. Would you recommend something like that if you went to go speak to a class of MBAs who are heading into
absolutely
financial side?
Okay. Even when I talk to I have a college-age daughter now, and when she talks about career paths and that sort of thing, business is a great background. A business degree or a finance degree or an accounting degree, they're great background.
Mm-hmm.
You may choose never to use it directly, but it's still fundamental to a business career.
Right.
And so it's not going to hurt you.
You can understand how everything kind of affects the bottom line.
And right.
Less difficult to get snowed by people. Where were you born?
I was born in Honolulu.
Whereabouts?
I was born in Kapi'olani Hospital.
Yeah. Was it Kapi'olani Hospital back then? It wasn't Medical Center for Women and Children?
I think it was Kapi'olani Hospital. I don't really know because I couldn't read.
Yeah. Where'd you grow up, though?
I grew up in the Anaheim area.
And where'd you go to school? High school.
Punahou. What
what class?
Class of 75.
And college?
I did my undergraduate work at University of Washington. I got a bachelor's.
UW,
yeah. Bachelor's degree in business administration. With
a BS?
It's a BA.
BA, business administration.
Concentration in accounting.
What year was that?
79.
Okay. Did you get a...
I went back, came back here. I actually worked for Deloitte and Touche, then Deloitte Haskins and Sells in Seattle. And then they transferred me back to the office here, and I resumed my education at University of Hawaii, got a master's in business administration with a concentration in management.
What year was that?
1986.
You miss that Seattle weather at all?
I do miss Seattle. It's a great city. I miss it, yeah, even cool weather. I don't necessarily miss the short, dreary days in the winter. But
okay, I couldn't do that. A little known fact, and we're looking for something fun.
Fun.
Heavy metal garage band, or
yeah, nothing that exciting. I wish I had something that exciting.
That's his next career.
Yeah, my next career. I guess my little known fact is my mother is, her maiden name is Ching.
Okay.
So,
well, that's not.
Okay, it gets better. It gets
okay,
better.
All right.
My brother gets married. My first sibling, my older brother, he gets married. He marries a Ching as well. So I'm related to a lot of Chings in town.
Okay.
For a while, I was thinking we could only marry somebody with the same surname, but it turned out not to be the case. So I did marry somebody. I was the second one of the four of us in the family, four kids in the family to get married. And so I married my childhood sweetheart. We've been married 26 years. We just celebrated an anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Ago. Thank you.
Okay, I'm still waiting the part where that's about you.
That's about as good as it gets,
okay.
Man.
Her name's not Ching?
No, I broke the streak.
So when you go to these weddings and family reunions, it's
confusing.
Yeah, blood or marriage? You're a Ching by blood or marriage? Okay, a mentor. This can be professional. This could be in your career, or it can be somebody that you mowed lawns for who said, "Rick, always."
Always
Rick, never.
Mow my lawn well.
Don't run over the dog.
I would say Lloyd Fougier. Lloyd was the partner in charge of the Deloitte office here in Honolulu. Recently left Deloitte, retired from Deloitte, and is now over at Hawaii Pacific University.
How do you spell his...
Fougier, Fuje.
LLOYDFUJIE. And he was a partner at Deloitte?
He was the managing partner.
Managing partner.
Or I'm not sure whether they call it managing partner anymore or partner in charge of that office.
Uh-huh.
But Lloyd is a unique individual. He's very outgoing. Not that accountants aren't outgoing, but he's very customer focused. Always had his clients' best interests at heart. A dynamic leader. Very walked around the office, talked to people a lot, encouraged people. Sometimes yelled at people, but always with their best interests at heart. And really, in a business where you don't think of customer focus so much, CPA firm
right.
type thing. He really was unique in that way.
So what were some of the lessons imprinted on you?
I think the way he touched the staff, he would walk around and talk to people. He was interested in you as an individual, took the time to talk to you about things. Again, I think the uniqueness of the customer, the way he interacted and built long-term relationships with customers is also impressive.
Nice. And he's now teaching at HPU?
I believe he's actually the chief financial officer of HPU.
Oh. Wow. Okay. Major challenge, and this could be in your personal life, your professional life for the company. Kind of more prefer the professional and personal, to be honest with you. We get a lot of...
Lower my handicap in golf.
Okay, there you go.
But no, I...
Okay, well, we got a hobbies one. We can use that one, too.
Yeah. But. No, I think the challenge that we face is keeping some of the momentum going that we have built here at Servco Automotive. We have a number of projects going on. You talked a little bit about this one that we finished
right,
here.
Which we'll get back to.
Right. We have a number of them right behind that on the way. And I think we've built some nice momentum with the changes that we have as an organization. But not only with respect to facility projects, but also with respect to how we approach our work and some of the things we're doing with our continual training and development of our people.
Mm-hmm.
We've built some solid wins, and to keep the momentum going is difficult.
Are there some principles, some key or core management techniques or leadership things that you need to in your position to do to keep that momentum going, or there's some...
Well, no, I don't think it's anything that's sophisticated. A lot of it is staying on top of things with respect to bringing an energy, I think, to the job, getting really excited about the things that, mm-hmm. that we're getting done, getting the managers excited about it, and seeing that vision of where we want to end up. And of course, as soon as we end up there, we'll have some new things to add on. So we
sure.
won't ever arrive.
Right.
There's no such thing as arrival in this. So we'll keep working on it continually. But we're doing well as a company. The car market has remained strong.
Right.
And one of the things we have to guard against, we've been lucky that we've been number one in the market in terms of unit sales.
Mm-hmm.
But you do get people stopping every once in a while and saying, "Oh, we've reached this new sales goal or this new sales level, whatever it is.
Can we rest now?
Yeah, can we rest? why do we keep pushing to do this one and doing this one? Aren't we successful based on whatever measure we're looking at?" But you can't do that. There's in this day and age, our competitors are good. There's customers are very. They're demanding, and they should be demanding. Their expectations are high, and we want to deliver to those expectations and exceed them. To do that, you have to constantly be searching for improvements.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the market a little bit while we're on that point. Why is Honolulu so car crazy?
Because cars are great. They're fun. I think part of it is the value that you get by purchasing a new vehicle.
Uh-huh.
There's been substantial improvements in the vehicle in terms of features. These can be safety features when's the last time you saw a car with crank windows? You just, everything is power side mirrors, and this dims for you so something doesn't shine in your eyes, and vanities with little lights so you can check to make sure that you're not having a bad hair day. All these things were luxury type things that were features that were in cars, but now have come down to mainstream
right.
cars. And those may be sort of niceties, but you have some real important things like side curtain airbags and vehicle skid control and real safety things. And really, you're getting those features in vehicles at prices that really haven't kept up with the... they're great value because the car prices have moderated, and affordability indexes would show you that cars are more affordable than ever before with more features. So you're really getting a great deal.
But is there something about our culture in Hawaii?
Not that I'm really aware of. California, for instance, Southern California, they're crazy about their cars
as
well.
True.
So, it's independence, it's a style of life. Maybe with some of our development, real estate developments moving farther out, people are driving, for instance, the Mililani every day.
They spend a lot of time in their cars, right?
Yeah, they can spend a lot of time in their cars, and if they're going to spend that much time in the car, they want something comfortable, it's functional. We're starting to see some more telematics in their vehicles, and DVD players hanging from hoods. Roof lines. Because
right.
again, if you watch a two-hour movie on the way home and keep the kids quiet, maybe that's a good thing.
So. Okay. Hobbies.
The usual things like golf.
Yeah. You mentioned your handicap. What is your handicap? You can't say my backswing.
No, it's 6.
Wow. Okay, any other hobbies?
I love to snow ski. Don't get to do that as much here.
Not a lot of that.
Try to get out every year and
ski, not snowboarding?
I have tried snowboarding. It's a little rough on the body. So I have generally stick to the...
See a lot of people laying on their side on that side of the hill.
Yeah.
Are you a pretty good skier?
I enjoy skiing. I've been skiing about 20 years.
Where do you go?
All over. Whistler. Utah. And Tahoe. Mostly the West Coast side.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And just recently gave up tennis. I played in the City Leagues, Honolulu Tennis League, HTO,
really?
For something like 25 years. And just recently stopped playing. They finally kicked me off the team. They just said, you just get off. And that was fine. Actually, great group of guys, but very competitive team. They always make it to the playoffs.
Oh.
They don't need riffraff like me.
I see. Okay. Any recent books you read?
Winning by Jack Welch. It's actually a very interesting book. And every year we have a management conference. Mm-hmm. And actually, we're going to design a number of our activities for our managers around the winning concepts from Jack Welch's book. So,
how about a fun book?
Fun books. I enjoy reading. I read Da Vinci Code, Angels and Demons.
Mm-hmm. What's Angels and Demons?
That's also Dan Brown's earlier book.
Okay.
I haven't done this for a while, but sort of suspense kind of books, Clancy type books.
Oh, yeah.
But. I do a lot of professional readings.
I'm sure you. I know you do. And
it's kind of hard to get to the fun books.
Okay, let's talk about. Can you explain the Servco Automotive? My word, empire. I don't understand it.
Okay.
And I don't think a lot of other people do.
Yeah, there are a lot of moving pieces to it, so I'm not sure. Hopefully, I'll do it justice.
Okay.
Let me start by covering our major brands of vehicles.
We're both in brands and just facilities all over various islands.
Right. We have our major brands are Toyota, Lexus, Scion, Chevrolet, and Suzuki. So the majority of our operations revolve around those brands, although we are in the tire business and we have some ancillary type automotive businesses. We have the Toyota dealerships here on this island, Servco Auto Windward over in Kaneohe, and we're sitting in Servco Auto Honolulu, the newest one, again, opened May 22nd. We are also in the process of renovating our currently named Waipahu Auto, and Waipahu Auto is a Chevrolet as well as a Toyota store, and we are building we've already finished the new service building. We are now building a brand new showroom out in Waipahu as well.
And those are some of the plans, future plans you were talking about that you want to keep the momentum going?
Correct.
Any other planned expansion that you can talk about?
Yes, we are working on a service center out in Kaimuki.
Mm-hmm.
So this facility we're sitting in is a combination of the old Toyota City dealership and our Kaimuki Toyota store. We combine the two operations into this facility, and we will take Kaimuki, and our intent is to change that to a satellite service facility. So we won't sell any cars out of it anymore. We'll strictly service vehicles. And that's really designed to better service our East Honolulu customer. Right now, our farthest eastbound service facility is on South Street. And by putting one in Kaimuki, this will take care of course, the east.
What is Mapunapuna considered in terms of the operation? Is it the biggest and the sort of the headquarters?
It is the biggest and the most centralized. So we actually have some of our automotive headquarters offices here. So we do consider this our centralized
okay.
point.
And then I noticed the cards, the values statement.
This is a circle value statement. Yes, our shared value statement.
Shared value statement. Please explain what that is, why everybody carries them, and, well, obviously what it says.
Okay.
Would you mind reading what's in the shared value statement?
Not at all. Our shared values, it's actually an acronym, Team Servco. The T in team stands for teamwork. The E stands for enjoyment. The A stands for achievement. And M stands for motivation. For Servco, the S stands for service, the E stands for excellence, the R stands for respect, the V stands for vision, C stands for communication, and O is ownership. These 10 values were actually our employees from the... We held seminars, and every single employee at that time, this was back in 2000, I believe it was 2000, mm-hmm. I may be off by a year,
mm-hmm.
But... Each employee had an opportunity in a four-hour session to talk about what was important to them, and a volunteer committee of employees sifted through all the suggestions. George Kanahele, a well-known consultant here in Hawaii, worked with us and boiled them down to our employee values that everybody agreed to live by. And so it was really ground up. It wasn't from senior management down. It was really the opposite, bottoms up.
And so there's sort of a implicit contract?
Yes, very much so. Our theory here is that satisfied employees, engaged employees, are the ones that can give great customer service.
Mm-hmm.
And great customer service lead to all sorts of long-term good things happening to the company. But if we don't start with employees who are happy and engaged and believe in what they're doing, we can't provide great customer service.
And their employees are encouraged to, they're laminated and they're, the one you're holding is kind of worn. And
it's worn and used, and our general managers will sometimes just walk around the dealership and say, hey, everybody who can show me a card right now out of your wallet, hey, let's go do something fun, or give out a movie ticket, or mm-hmm. do whatever they feel is motivating. We talk about it. We end meetings with it. We'll take one of them each month, and there are a number of things sent out by our values champion. We actually have an officer-level position, and her title is Vice President and Values Champion.
What does that mean? What kind of job is that?
She works with us to make sure that we consider in values in the way we do business and the decisions we make. She sits on our executive committee. Again, it's an officer-level position.
Sort of the Jiminy Cricket of the values?
Yes. She matches
up. So you're saying you really, when you're talking about operations and things, that the card and the values are referenced? Does this jive with what we have said we were going to...
Right. Yeah, we've... I give you an example. When many years ago we were switching from our 401k plan for mm-hmm. our employees, was the investments were directed by an administrative committee. I happened to be sitting on the administrative committee, and we were making the decision we were faced with is, do we continue to administer it with this, the way we were doing it, with the admin committee making investment decisions? Or do we go to a self-directed 401k where each employee would be allowed to choose their own investments?
Mm-hmm.
And from the feedback we were getting, we felt our employees would be better served by giving them the choice to really specify what they were looking for. And we were down this path of saying, let's just go ahead and start working with our providers to change it over. And I remember in that admin committee, Mark Fukunaga, our chairman, said, what would the values tell us? How should we answer this question? And it was decided that the best way would be to hold sessions with all the employees to ask them the question, do you want to self-direct? But you can't ask a complex question without giving them a lot of background.
Mm-hmm.
You don't make a decision like that overnight. So we actually designed, we flew in a consultant to sit down and I believe hold 40-something sessions.
Wow.
Of 4 hours each to first give you some background and then ask you the question, do you want to self-direct or do you want to continue to do it the way you're doing it? And we decided that majority was going to rule. Whatever the employees voted, we would do.
Wow.
So I sat in the first session as a member of the admin committee because we gave an introduction and we explained what the decision was and worked with the consultant. And so I looked at the first tabulation of votes from that first group. And it was something like 98% wanted to say, yeah, we want to self-direct. So virtually by then, we knew what the answer was.
Right.
And but we had 39 more of these sessions scheduled. And of course, I paid for the consultant to do it. But it really, that was early on after we had developed the full values. But Mark stomped us and made us think about it and said, we shouldn't, as a committee, make a decision for 800 or 900 employees without first talking to them and getting their, because that's respect and that's giving them ownership of their own fund within
right.
the plan. And frankly, it costs the company a lot of money.
Well, I was going to say, as a guy who's been trained in watching the bottom line, you consult the values card system and it's telling you bring in a consultant, take how many man hours, how much employee time. I mean, it's very clunky.
It does seem a little touchy-feely, warm and fuzzy, but it actually in the long run works. Again, it may not be, you're not going to use it all the time, of course. If the building is burning down, somebody better get a fire hose
right.
and not take a consensus view of
right.
how to put out the fire. But we do use it in our decision making every day. Again, it's not just something that is up for show, but nobody knows what it is. I'd venture to say if you walk outside and ask people name the 10 values, they would come up with them.
Did it change the culture of the organization when you started implementing or openly consulting them and talking about it?
I think it has. People feel much more informed
uh-huh.
about decisions, the reasons why.
Uh-huh.
In particular, we've focused a lot on communicating better as an organization, not only decisions being made by management. Somebody has to be making those decisions.
Right.
Somebody's running the company. But explaining to people the why behind it and giving them more information, being more open. And this has been this is not an overnight thing. It's
No.
a journey that's been
Right.
happening for quite some time. We are currently in our third generation of Fukunaga's running the company. They've been in place. Mark and Eric Fukunaga have been in the current position since 1995. And it has been a change for us compared to the second generation. I had the pleasure to work with both of their fathers, and the company has changed.
Well, I could see in some organizations having these meetings about the 401k, and the word gets out, management wants to change the way we do things, and people just going running amok with the rumor mill, and then, what are they up to now, initially? But as you go on,
right, exactly.
Is that too cynical of me to make an observation? I'm not saying that happened here, but kind of a cultural change.
Well, I think they feel that they're being asked. Their input is important. Certainly in customer service, we're always asking all of our people about how to improve customer service. Right before we came in this room, I was talking to when I was trying to deal with that breakfast issue that was James was outside. He's our lot attendant out here, and he's actually looking for customers to make sure that they don't miss the shuttle. And so he was mentioning, oh, customers will sometimes want to go look at a new car,
right,
even though they're supposed to be waiting. He thinks they're over in the customer lounge. And again, our lot attendants, our frontline people have all sorts of ideas on how to improve our business, and to have their opinions count in things, mm-hmm. whether it's how to improve customer service or whether they should be self-directing their 401k. That's consistent.
Now, I also noticed there were signs up that are different from the shared...
Circle shared values.
Shared values. Kina ole?
Right. Kina ole is something, again, George Conahelli worked with us. It's doing the right thing at the right time in the right way.
It's different, though, from the shared values.
Certainly related to the shared uh-huh. values, and it's not in conflict in any way,
right.
but it is a different concept. Kina ole is something that George Conahelli brought to us. The circle shared values were really developed internally by our own employees.
Okay, last question, because I know you're very busy and I know you have to go. What do you? Can you do some magic eight ball, crystal ball gazing? A colleague and I wrote a story for, I think it was Monday's newspaper, about we've enjoyed 10 straight years of as an economy overall economic prosperity, and the economists all say there's not going to be one big gigantic big boom. It'll be a number of factors, rising interest rates. Where is the automotive industry looking ahead for where things are going?
I think most of the numbers that I've seen first, the balance of this calendar year, I haven't seen a lot looking forward beyond 2006. Mm-hmm. Show a slight slowing of vehicle sales, new car vehicle sales, mm-hmm. in Hawaii. The 1990s weren't a very good decade for car sales. They were pretty poor.
Right.
The 2000s, once we got into this new century, car sales have actually been strong.
Yeah.
There's some feeling that there was some pent-up demand from the 90s,
right, exactly.
Because of the poor economy. Now, as you said, with the economy cooling, the rising gas prices, interest rates going up, so maybe more going to their mortgages. There, mm-hmm. there seems to be a slowing. And the number that you most often hear, something in the 3-5% decrease for the balance of this year comparing 06 to 05.
Mm-hmm.
Again, 05 was a very good year.
Right.
So you're comparing it against good year. Again, I think 07, it's not as optimistic as it had been heading into, say, calendar year 2005.
Mm-hmm. And so that's just near term. Do you have any long term or midterm?
Yeah, I'm not that good at that kind of thing. You start talking about hybrid technology or
right.
Hydrogen fuel cells. It's really tough to see what's going to happen much beyond.
But Servco is going to continue to make these improvements.
Well, we're very optimistic about the car business, and being a major player here, we want to take a leadership role not mm-hmm. only in our facilities, but in our employees and how we do business. And again, the focus always being around the customer. Mm-hmm. So we are investing a lot back into our facilities and our people.
Great. Okay. Thanks, Rick. Any other final thoughts you'd like to share?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. It's been fun.
So have I. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Dan.